Funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association. Making public schools great for every child. RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together. And New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, 13 arrests at Princeton University as students continue their sit-ins and protest of the war in Gaza.
It was absolutely vile to see police on this campus, because police, I believe, should not be on any university campus.
Plus, students at Eastern Regional High speak out in solidarity, accusing their administrators of censorship after several were suspended for a planned pro-Palestinian walkout.
The walkout on October 15th faced none of this pushback, and it was for the same exact premise. It was for the same exact thing. It was for innocent lives lost. So for us to receive this pushback, we don't understand.
Also, the state looks to power up, approving another round of offshore wind projects, but Jersey Shore mayors are pushing back.
Yeah, the big question is why? Why are you doing this? It's economically not feasible.
And bird flu warning, concerns here in the Garden State after cases of the virus are confirmed in several states across the country. NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Tuesday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. The pro-Palestinian movement has shifted from encampments to full-scale occupations on college campuses. 13 people at Princeton University were arrested Monday night after taking over an administrative building at the Ivy League school. It's one of several demonstrations that have taken place over the past week at the school in protest of the war in Gaza. Organizers at Rutgers aren't going anywhere either, maintaining about 60 tents set up on the university's Voorhees Mall. Similar encampments and occupations have led to weeks of tensions at other colleges across the country, including at the universities of Texas and North Carolina, Emerson and Columbia, where dozens of students are occupying Hamilton Hall on campus there, facing suspension and vowing to remain until Columbia meets their demands to divest and disclose financial ties with companies linked to Israel as the war rages on with more than 34,000 Palestinians killed. As the standoffs escalate, more people are questioning the roles universities play in free speech. Ted Goldberg is continuing to cover the situation at Princeton and has the latest. Ted.
Brianna, as more and more encampments pop up at campuses nationwide, the scene here at Princeton has certainly calmed down from yesterday when 13 people were arrested outside of Clio Hall. One of the graduate students who was detained and then let go spoke to us about her experience.
It was a pretty bizarre experience when we first moved in. Like, this is Princeton. I don't think this happens every day.
Oddity Rao isn't allowed on campus while her disciplinary process plays out. She was given a summons inside Clio Hall and then released.
The university was totally silent. They refused to speak with all of the bargaining committee, which included faculty, which included postdocs, which included students.
Meeting with the protesters' bargaining committee was a demand from the protesters before they would leave Clio Hall, a building that hosts the administration for Princeton's graduate school.
It is graduate labs that are most financially implicated with Department of Defense funding, for example. And so the graduate school is one of the spaces that it's really important, it's critical to make these like assertions that they must be transparent.
Rao had one last week to finish the semester, and she says her professors are helping her to wrap up classes. While she has a court date in a few weeks, her status with the school is up in the air.
Barring us from campus is in effect a form of suspension, because if I can't be here to complete my academic work, then that kind of creates the exact conditions of a suspension without calling it that.
It was absolutely vile to see police on this campus, because police, I believe, should not be on any university campus.
Students like Tom Abi Samra say unless administration meets with the students, more buildings could be occupied in the future.
What I can say is that we will be here until they disclose and they divest.
there will continue to be demonstrations like this because there are so many of us who are willing to say, look, like, whatever disciplinary consequences we face are secondary to the cause of a free Palestine.
Last night, President Christopher Eisgruber said, I appreciate that this incident was and remains deeply upsetting to many people, including especially the staff of the graduate school. It is also completely unacceptable. Everyone on this campus needs to feel safe and to be safe. Faculty, students, and staff must be able to conduct university business without disruption, harassment, or threat. We will continue to work to ensure that this campus is one where all members of the community feel welcome and can thrive. As encampments grow, politicians from both sides of the aisle have condemned them, and some have condemned those condemnations.
Since they don't like this particular protest, they are willing to see and condone very heavy-handed reactions to it.
U.S. politicians don't really believe in the core values of U.S. democracy, right? The students, on the other hand, very much believe in the core values of U.S. democracy.
I will certainly name Josh Gottheimer as one of the worst offenders in this.
Congressman Gottheimer was one of 21 members of Congress to sign a letter calling for trustees at Columbia to disband their encampment. And if they don't, they should resign so that they can be replaced by individuals who will uphold the university's legal obligations. Across the Hudson, expect these protests to continue, with commencements right around the corner. In Princeton, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
The pro-Palestinian movement isn't limited to higher ed. Several students at Eastern Regional High School in Camden County were suspended late last week after a walkout in support for Palestine was canceled by school administrators. The students are now accusing leadership of trying to censor them, but district officials defended the action, telling senior correspondent Joanna Gagas the event was canceled out of safety concerns.
The walkout was organized to speak out and really respect, the innocent lives lost in Gaza. And we really want the war to stop because we just want people to stop being killed.
Students at Eastern Regional High School in Voorhees were planning a walkout last week to protest the deaths of innocent people in Gaza, but it was canceled by school administrators, and three students ended with suspensions. Ash Tavares was one of them.
After the walkout was canceled, we received an email. And I went to the office with a couple of my peers, and I went there, and all we wanted was simply to talk to the principal. And he tried to intimidate us out of the room, trying to like threaten to write us up in suspension, and he was really dismissing us. He wouldn't even talk to us. And we were just trying to schedule a meeting and get a meeting to have communication. And I got suspended because I wouldn't leave the room without a meeting being scheduled. And they called it insubordination.
The walkout was canceled after Camden County Commissioner Jeff Nash sent an email to the Voorhees superintendent raising concerns about how it was being advertised and who was attending.
The walkout had started to receive outside support. Advertisements for the walkout went viral, inviting non-students and non-parents to participate. And it became what we thought to be a dangerous situation for the students, especially given the rise of anti-Semitism in our community and throughout the country, and if not the world.
Tensions around these Palestinian protests have risen dramatically in recent weeks, leading to arrests and other disciplinary actions on college campuses around the country. Students at Columbia University last night barricaded themselves inside their campus administrative building, all of it leading to a heightened distrust between the Jewish and Palestinian communities. We reached out to the principal and got no response, but the Voorhees superintendent said in a statement that a new united rally in support of basic human rights planned for May 20th is intended to demonstrate support for innocent people on both sides of the conflict. But pro-Palestinian students say they won't attend and that they're being treated differently than their Jewish peers who staged a similar walkout after the Hamas attacks on October 7th.
The walkout on October 13th faced none of this pushback, and it was for the same exact premise. It was for the same exact thing. It was for innocent lives lost. So for us to receive this pushback, we don't understand. And we are waiting for answers for that.
They say they've received hateful messages on social media accusing them of being anti-Jewish and pro-Hamas.
As a student group, we never said any of those statements. It was just kind of disheartening to see a grown adult putting these labels on us that we've never identified with.
But this student who wants to remain anonymous says it won't quench their efforts.
It just kind of makes us want to push our point out even more, to kind of just push past these narratives placed on us, and to just show people that this is not who we are. Our message has been clear, that we were standing up for the innocent lives lost in the war going on in Gaza.
Their suspensions ended today, and they hope to come to an agreement with the district on a new walkout. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Joanna Gagas.
More kids in New Jersey are getting screened for lead. According to data released from the State Health Department for 2022, it shows the majority, 78% of children who turned 3 that year, got at least one blood test. That's an uptick from the year prior. But as medical experts remind us, there is no safe level of lead in children, and the consequences can be devastating. Melissa Rose Cooper takes a look at how the state is trying to eradicate the problem.
When you hear about learning disabilities, think about what it's a child, their auditory processing is affected, and they can't hear the difference between S as in Sam and F as in Frank. And think about what that might be like if you're trying to learn to read.
Just one example of the negative impact a child who is exposed to lead can face, according to Elise Pivnik. The highly toxic metal is known to cause brain damage and behavioral problems in both kids and adults, but it's especially concerning as a child develops.
It also affects your short-term memory, and you learn your multiplication tables on Monday, and on Tuesday you can't remember them. So, sometimes the hallmark is you're trying as hard as you can and you still can't learn like your peers who are not lead burdened.
It's an issue New Jersey is taking steps to address, with more kids getting tested. According to a new report from the State Health Department for fiscal year 2022, 78% of children who turned 3 that year were tested at least once for lead, compared to 72% in 2021. Data also shows the rate of lead poisoning has dropped in recent years, but that number is expected to go up since New Jersey is lowering its elevated level threshold from 5 micrograms of lead per deciliter of blood to 3.5.
There is no safe level of lead in a child's blood. Any amount, no matter how small, does have a detrimental effect. And so it is a very reassuring thing to see that that standard is being lowered in conjunction with this report coming out.
New Jersey is now looking to invest an additional $5.2 million to expand its lead screening program for children. Kelvin Bodie says while many people tend to associate exposure with pipes, paint is the most common source of contamination, despite a nearly 50-year-old ban on lead paint.
Even though we're not as old of a country as the rest of the world, we are a very old state. And that means that we have some of the oldest housing stock in the country here in New Jersey. And so, unfortunately, it means that you often have a lot of vulnerable, lower income or immigrant populations that are moving into lower housing stock, especially in cities that had a legacy of being industrial or really working with those materials. And so despite the fact that we've sort of recognized the legacy of lead and what it does to people, we're still dealing with infrastructure and housing stock within a lot of our older municipalities that people are still being exposed to the paint and other construction materials.
And then we have other ones. We have Ayurvedic medicines, which have been known to have lead. We've seen candies over the years from other countries which have had lead. We've seen toys and old cribs that are painted with lead.
Bruce Ruck, managing director of the New Jersey Poison Control Center at Rutgers New Jersey Medical School, says early detection and prevention are key.
So if you're living in an older home in New Jersey built before the late 70s, we suggest that the house be tested. And if lead is found, then we have to separate the child from the source until such time as that home is abated and cleaned up. We suggest that all children between the ages of 1 and 2 have a blood test at age 1 and at age 2. If they skipped it, then they should have it done as soon as possible after that.
The proposed funding to expand the lead testing program is part of the governor's proposed state budget. Lawmakers have until before the fiscal year starts in July to approve it. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
Well, despite hitting a number of hurdles, state officials are letting the offshore wind industry know New Jersey is open for business. The Board of Public Utilities today opened up a fourth round of bidding for new wind farms. But the push comes as the Murphy administration trades blows with a group of Jersey Shore mayors who don't want to see turbines filling up the ocean. Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports.
We are committed to seeing the economic development that offshore wind is bringing to New Jersey.
New Jersey regulators today officially opened a fourth round of bids for new offshore wind projects, which could add from 1.2 to 4 gigawatts of clean energy to New Jersey's portfolio. But the vote came amidst a whirlwind of regional challenges confronting the fledgling industry.
Certainly, offshore wind is really at an inflection point right now.
Industry analyst Chris Olith says three New York projects recently collapsed due to supply chain and inflation problems. They're up for rebids. Meanwhile, New Jersey's Atlantic Shores reportedly may ask to rebid its wind farm contract. It's a volatile marketplace.
And if we are going to build offshore wind in a responsible and cost-effective manner, then we need to have protections for the state of New Jersey. There's a lot of interesting opportunities and a lot of potential competition, which I think is really what the state wants, what we want as ratepayers.
What Governor Murphy wants is for New Jersey to develop 11 gigawatts of offshore wind power by 2040. But that's a much tougher target after developer Ørsted canceled Jersey's first two wind farm projects last October. To compensate, the Board of Public Utilities has sped up requests for bids. And this fourth solicitation bakes in some extra protections, like a $50,000 per megawatt security fee and another $100 million performance guarantee.
There's an additional $100 million letter of credit for any potential rebids. And that's all to ensure the project completion. We see it as incentives to ensure that the projects are staying on track.
As the saying goes, once bitten, twice shy. Atlantic Shores did not respond to requests for comment on a possible rebid. It's a contentious topic for eight mayors along New Jersey's coast, including all of Long Beach Island.
I have never heard, nor have any of the other towns ever heard of, why they're allowing somebody to come back and rebid.
Long Beach Township's Jim Mancini and the other mayor sent the BPU a letter citing their consultant's report. It projects Atlantic Shores' 157 turbines about 9 miles offshore could cost the town $668 million in lost tourism, jobs, and tax dollars, and also claims a project rebid could eventually elevate ratepayer costs by more than $6 billion.
They should have issued specific performance on the existing contract and go from there, but it's not going to be profitable because this stuff doesn't work.
Again, can't speculate on any specific projects or bids, but we will move forward with a competitive process and evaluate all the bids in the best interest of New Jersey residents.
The BPU in January approved two additional New Jersey wind farms, Attentive and Leading Light, but they're still months away from getting required permits and won't come online until the 2030s. Federal officials do plan to streamline regulations to ease the application process. The fourth round of New Jersey bids are due July 10th. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report, the Hudson Tunnel project is expected to be an even bigger boon to the economy than originally thought. A report released Monday from the Regional Plan Association now estimates the massive plan to build the Gateway Rail Tunnel between New Jersey and New York will create 95,000 jobs. That's 20,000 more than the previous forecast in 2017. The report also finds work will generate a massive $19.6 billion in economic activity. Those numbers are based on three of the early work projects already underway or about to start for the new tunnel, which is part of the larger Gateway project that's been pending since 2011. The plan for the project is to build two new rail tunnels and rehabilitate the existing ones that are more than a century old. It's all expected to be complete within the next 10 years.
It's tremendous news for our region. This project's underway, it's happening, and we're already starting to see the economic benefits and the return on investment. All of that kind of flow of capital and strong economic bond really rests on a well-functioning transportation system, and the Gateway program is the key to that.
The lawsuit to ban smoking on Atlantic City's casino floors just took a hit from a formidable team. Attorney General Matt Plotkin and Unite Here Local 54, which is the main union representing casino workers, on Monday asked a judge to dismiss an anti-smoking lawsuit. It was filed last month by a grassroots group of other casino workers who say they're quite literally sick from the secondhand smoke they breathe while on the job. The group wants the court to overturn New Jersey's indoor smoking law, which bans it virtually everywhere except casinos. In a letter to the judge, Plotkin defended the current law, saying it doesn't deny any group of people equal protection and doesn't infringe on a constitutional right to safety. The state and Local 54 argue a total smoking ban would be catastrophic to Atlantic City and place thousands of jobs at risk. But opponents point to Parks Casino outside Philly, which has been thriving since putting a ban in place.
This is an issue which has enormous amount of passion around it. And by the way, the unions are divided on this. At the end of the day, whether it's through the courts or through legislation, and by the way, I'm not going to comment on a lawsuit, but my taste is that this gets resolved through legislation as opposed to the courts. But whatever it is, I've said this from moment one, and I'll reiterate, if a bill gets to my desk, I will sign it.
On Wall Street, stocks tumbled today after new labor data showed the Fed's 11 interest rate hikes are still not enough to ease price pressures. Here's how the markets closed for the day. And finally tonight, what you need to know about the bird flu outbreak in the U.S. The Department of Agriculture on Monday began testing samples of ground beef from grocery stores in states where dairy cows tested positive for the H5N1 virus. It comes after FDA regulators said samples of pasteurized milk had trace remnants of the virus, which has now been detected in 34 dairy cattle herds throughout 9 states since late March. Also, one person in Texas tested positive, and a dolphin in Florida is confirmed dead from bird flu. This is the first time a bird flu virus has been detected in U.S. cattle, and while human risk remains low, there are a lot of questions about the scope of the spread. Here to answer some of them is Dr. Amar Patil, New Jersey's state veterinarian. Dr. Patil, thanks so much for joining me on the show. Let's just put on the record that there are no outbreaks confirmed in New Jersey of bird flu, but what's the risk to the general public here?
So the risk to general public is right now very low, according to the federal agencies. So as you pointed out, you know, there are no outbreaks of bird flu currently in New Jersey, either in poultry or cattle that we know of. And according to the assessment, you know, done by CDC, FDA and the USDA, currently the risk of, you know, transmission to people is low.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that transmission. How, or do we know, I guess, really is the question, how this virus is spreading and how it's being transferred? Because we know there's one person confirmed to have contracted the virus in Texas, but also now a dolphin, a sea mammal, that died of the virus. Do we know how it's spreading?
So the virus is spreading in wild through migratory birds. They basically come in contact with domestic poultry or wild animals such as, you know, wild mammals out there, like, you know, foxes, etc. Sometimes, you know, the marine animals like dolphins, they end up, you know, eating, you know, these dead birds as you know, as a food, and that's how, you know, these wild animals they are getting infected with this bird flu.
So it has to be through contact. I mean, I'm thinking back to 2022 when we had the outbreak in our poultry. We saw the rise of price in eggs. It just skyrocketed, mm-hmm. and that had a lot to do with folks who were handling birds who had contracted the virus or handling the dead birds. So it's through contact. Is that what you're saying?
So in poultry, there is definitely, you know, direct contact as well as indirect means of spread of the virus. So direct contact between, you know, poultry as well as, you know, through fomites or equipment, you know, vehicle, etc., has shown to be, you know, transmitting this virus.
And so I think the question on a lot of folks' minds is generally, is it safe for me to drink the milk or eat the beef that I'm buying from the grocery store? What can you tell us about that?
So FDA has conducted some studies and the preliminary results from those studies, you know, indicate that the pasteurization process is actually effective in inactivating the virus. Again, you know, these studies are still ongoing. The USDA is also sampling the raw beef samples. I'm hopeful that, you know, the test will, you know, come back with a you know, good, you know, safe report for all of us. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
As we all are. Dr. Amar Patil, New Jersey State Veterinarian, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And that's going to do it for us tonight. But don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Venosi for the entire NJ Spotlight News team. Thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.
NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association. New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com and by the PSCG Foundation.
Have some water.
Look at these kids.
How are you?
What do you see? I see myself. I became an ESL teacher to give my students what I wanted when I came to this country. The opportunity to learn, to dream, to achieve, a chance to belong and to be an American. My name is Julia Toriani Crompton, and I'm proud to be an NJEA member.